This is Central Time on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret. Private equity firms buy up companies with the hope of later selling them for a profit. In the last decade, a trend has emerged among those private equity firms buying emergency room staffing companies and other healthcare businesses. We're talking now about what happens when private equity firms get into the healthcare business. Margot Sanger-Katz is a domestic correspondent for the New York Times, where she writes about healthcare. Margot, welcome to Central Time.
Thank you so much for having me.
Well, I'm guessing most people are like me, and when we go into a clinic or an emergency room, hopefully not too often, we don't think this might be owned by this financial investment firm. How common is this?
It's fairly common in emergency rooms. So in general, around the country, most doctors are either employed by the hospital where they work, or they are part of a private practice, you know, group of doctors that are basically small business owners and run their own medical practice. And they practice sometimes in the office and sometimes in a hospital. But what we've seen in the last few years is that a growing number of those private practices have been purchased by these big investment firms that are kind of bundling them up together and running more and more practices around the country. And there are various reasons why they seem to be doing this. One is that I think there are some advantages of scale in terms of just managing the practice and doing the office things. And, you know, sometimes doctors are not the best business owners. They just want to practice medicine. But in the case of emergency room medicine, it seems like there are some real business reasons why these private equity firms have decided to buy these kinds of doctor practices. And there is an interesting coda to all this, which I can get to, but there actually Congress has stepped in and passed legislation that is about to be implemented that in some ways weakens the case for this kind of ownership, for this kind of medical practice.
Yeah, before we get into that, I want to talk about these staffing companies. You know, if I go into an emergency room, I assume the doctor works for the hospital. That may not necessarily be true, though. How does that work?
Yeah, so, you know, in a lot of cases, that hasn't been true for a long time. So think about an example. You go to the hospital to have a knee replacement surgery, and there's an orthopedic surgeon who is taking care of your knee, and maybe there's an anesthesiologist who is handling your anesthesia. And in most hospitals in America, neither of those people actually work for the hospital. They work for private practice companies that employ doctors, and they run their own businesses. So the orthopedic surgeon will be with a group of orthopedic surgeons, and you will sometimes get a bill from them separate from the bill from the hospital. The anesthesiologist likely works for a group of anesthesiologists, and you might get a bill from them separate from the bill that you get from the hospital. But what is different about these private equity ownership arrangements is that instead of, you know, 5 or 10 or 20 doctors in a local area who have banded together to form a private practice, like your local anesthesiologist might, these are national staffing companies that are buying lots of practices all around the country. And so you have the same company that is controlling the employment of lots and lots of emergency rooms because they make these deals with the hospitals. And if the hospital needs an emergency room physician, they're going to hire one of these emergency room physicians who is employed by one of these large companies.
Okay. Am I going to feel the difference if I'm a patient, either in terms of quality of care or in billing? Is that, you know, surprise medical bill? I know you've been covering that issue, Margot, over the years. Is that surprise medical bill going to be more surprising because of these private equity firms?
So what it looks like, and I have done some reporting with colleagues, and there has been some academic research sort of backing this up, is that it really looks like a big part of the reason why some of these private equity firms have been so interested in employing emergency room physicians in particular is because it is a situation where it is, in fact, quite easy to send people surprise bills. So what's a surprise bill? A surprise bill is when you go to the hospital, and the hospital is covered by your insurance, and you think that your care is going to be covered. You know, maybe you're going to have to pay your deductible or a co-insurance amount, but basically your insurance is going to pay for your stay. But what happens is that some doctor touches you at the hospital who is not covered by your insurance, and then you get a big bill from them, often costing many, many more times than what your insurance would have paid. And then you're kind of on the hook for this big bill. That's a surprise bill. And what our reporting showed is that these large private equity backed emergency room staffing companies are pretty likely to stay out of network, to decline to make deals with insurance companies. and then to pass along bills to individual patients. They have gotten a little bit better. We did our reporting a few years ago, and since then, Envision, one of these large private equity funded staffing companies that was a particularly serious offender in this, has said that they've made efforts to get more of their doctors under contracts. But it does seem that in general, if you were treated by one of these physicians who is owned by a private equity group, you probably are a little bit more likely to end up with a surprise bill than if you were treated by an emergency room physician who was employed by just a traditional private practice.
We're talking to Margot Sanger-Katz from the New York Times. She writes about healthcare there. We're looking at private equity companies getting into the healthcare business, often employing doctors and other healthcare professionals you might run into at your local emergency room. Margot, you mentioned that Congress had passed a bill that could change some of this. What is in the works when that kicks in?
Yeah, so this bill was passed in December, was part of a big legislative package that included a lot of COVID relief, but it also included this bipartisan bill that Congress had been working on for some time. And what that bill does, it basically bans surprise billing. So it means if you as a patient, you go to the hospital, that hospital is covered by your insurance, you're having your knee surgery, and it turns out that the anesthesiologist did not accept your insurance. Instead of you getting a big bill in the mail that you have to pay, which is how it is now, potentially, you're just going to pay your normal coinsurance just the same as if you were treated by an in-network doctor. And then there's going to be a procedure where the anesthesiologist and the insurance company are going to have to duke it out behind closed doors to figure out what kind of payment is going to be made for that service. And if they can't agree, there's going to be a system where they go to a neutral arbiter who's going to hear both of their cases and decide what the payment should be. But the crucial thing to understand, this law does not go fully into effect until next year. So starting January 1st, you as a patient no longer have to worry about these surprise bills. If you go to a hospital for a service that is covered by your insurance, you don't have to worry that anyone else in that hospital is going to suddenly ambush you with a bill you weren't expecting.
This has been in the works for a while. You reported, I think it was back in late 2019, Margot, it looked like something was going to happen on surprise billing in Congress. And then there was this lobbying effort, and it wasn't clear who it was coming from. What did you find out?
Yeah, this was a fascinating thing. And, you know, many of your listeners may have seen these ads on television. They were running, you know, on the Super Bowl, there was an ad about this. These were running all around the country, particularly in states where there were members of Congress who were up for re-election, particularly senators up for re-election. And these ads were basically saying, this law is going to be really bad. It's going to cause there to be no doctors in hospitals, and it's going to cause all kinds of problems. And this was what's called a dark money group, which means they did not have to disclose who their donors were. So just the ads would just say, you know, this ad was paid for by Dr. Patient Unity, but there was no information about who that was. And we did some reporting and were able to discover that, in fact, it was two of these very large private equity firms that own a lot of emergency room physicians that were funding this effort, which was millions and millions of dollars on consumer ads, also Facebook ads, direct mail to constituents telling them to vote for or not to vote for various lawmakers, depending on their support of the bill.
We have this law coming into effect, as you mentioned, next year on surprise medical billing. I know it hasn't kicked in yet. We're talking about the future here, but is it thought that this could affect the economic balancing act here that makes it less attractive for these private equity companies to step into emergency rooms?
I really think that it does. You know, when you talk to these firms, they don't say our business model is to gouge patients and that's why we are investing in emergency room physicians. They say that there are economies of scale or other reasons why they think that they can make more money than what they paid for these practices. But if you look at the finances of these two groups, it appears that their debt bonds that have been placed against these companies are declining in value since this legislation started moving. So that suggests that the market thinks that these companies are worth less than they were before this legislation passed. And again, you know, that suggests that without the ability to send these surprise bills, these companies are less likely to be profitable.
Now, part of the story of paying for healthcare in the country, of course, some of it comes from the government in terms of Medicaid and Medicare. Do we know there's concerns about different agencies, different institutions charging different rates for the same procedure? Do we know if that's an issue for these private equity owned emergency room groups?
Well, a really important difference between these public payers, Medicare and Medicaid, and the private insurance that lots of us have through our jobs or that we buy on the Obamacare exchange or from an insurance company, is that Medicare and Medicaid basically pay everyone the same price, and they don't really allow for this kind of surprise billing. So if you're a Medicare patient and you're treated in a hospital, Medicare basically pays every emergency room doctor the same amount for their services, regardless of who employs them. And the doctors are not allowed to bill Medicare patients for any extra charges. That's already written into law. So with this new law that Congress passed and that is currently in the process of being implemented, that really affects sort of the rest of us, people who buy our own insurance, people who get our insurance through work, who have kind of private health insurance.
In just our last minute or so, Margo, a lot of question marks here, obviously. What are you watching for, especially as this surprise medical bill law comes into effect?
Well, I am watching two things. So one, on the business side, it will be interesting to see if private equity continues to invest in doctors. I think, you know, certainly there's a possibility that they have some other business strategy that they want to pursue that makes them think that they will be better at running medical practices than doctors are. And so my colleagues and I have been keeping an eye on that, on whether they are continuing to invest in medicine and in what kinds and how they're running these practices once they buy them. And then the other thing is that this law did pass through Congress, but then there's this whole process where regulators have to figure out all the nuts and bolts of how the law is going to work. And we're very much in the thick of that right now. The Biden administration is expected to issue its first regulation kind of interpreting this law tomorrow. So I'm very curious to see kind of the details of how this is all going to work and how seamlessly it's going to work for consumers.
I'll watch for your reporting on that. Margo, thanks a lot for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me.
That's Margo Sanger-Katz, domestic correspondent at the New York Times, where she writes about healthcare. She joined us for a look at emergency rooms and why many of them are operated in effect or staffed by private equity companies.